Good afternoon. Welcome into another edition of The Scoop here on KLGR 1490 AM FM 95.9. Also myklgr.com. We're going to talk with Cal Soderquist of the Timberwolves Radio Network to bring you a little bit of a perspective on what the Timberwolves have done so right this year compared to last year. Plus, we'll also touch on some other topics around the NBA with Cal. He'll be on at about 3:15 here today. We've also got the Purple Pillage podcast, continued reaction from the NFC title game loss for the Minnesota Vikings. So that's coming up at about 3:35. Plus, we'll also try to come up with some potential answers for the Vikings as to what do they do at quarterback. So a lot to get to here today. And why don't we get it started? We'll start off by taking a look at our top sports headlines here for today. Taking a look at our top sports headlines for today, LeBron James has become the youngest player ever to score 30,000 points. He did so last night in a loss to the San Antonio Spurs. So the trouble in Cleveland continues as the Cavaliers are once again in free fall. And LeBron joins the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Dirk Nowitzki, and now LeBron is seventh to join that list. And a very interesting list, top to bottom. You've got guys like Kareem and Wilt, and also players like Kobe and Michael Jordan. They all have brought different styles to getting into the 30,000-point club. And it's just, it makes you appreciate what LeBron has done for as long as he has been able to be around. And it seems like he is just continuing to get it done despite a very, very long list of supporting cast members. The Minnesota Timberwolves have a couple of representatives to the All-Star game. Karl-Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, both made the list as reserves. And it'll be interesting to see if they end up having to square off with the new format. It's not East versus West anymore. It is Team Curry against Team James. A silver lining to come out of the loss to the NFC title game against the Philadelphia Eagles, as various Eagles fans have been donating to the Mike Zimmer Foundation as a way to apologize for the fan behavior throughout the weekend with Vikings fans in town to watch them take on the Eagles. And it gives a positive ending to what far and large was a negative experience for many Vikings fans that attended the game in person. And we will see if this continues. We've seen this with the Vikings doing this, and now we're seeing the Eagles do the same, which certainly is a good end to this situation. We'll see how Eagles fans react when they are here for the Super Bowl. The Golden Gopher men's basketball team had the lead against Northwestern late, but ended up giving that up, losing 77-69. Gophers now 14-9 on the season, continuing what has been a free fall for them here over the past handful of games. And after some rumors circulating about Glenn Perkins' future during the Twins winter caravan, Perkins set the record straight, officially retiring today from baseball activities. Said he wants to spend more time with his family doing the things that he enjoys, things that he did while he was playing, except just not involving the baseball part of it, according to his tweet earlier today. So there you have it, your top sports headlines here for today. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be joined by Cal Soderquist at about 3:15. And then plenty more to come, all next here on The Scoop.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Your home for Redwood Valley Cardinal Athletics all season long. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
And we're joined today on The Scoop by Cal Soderquist of the Timberwolves Radio Network. Cal, thanks for joining me.
You bet, Seth. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we take a look at the Timberwolves, what they've got coming up and how they've done over the last couple of games, I do have a couple of bigger picture NBA questions for you. The first one being, we saw a major milestone in the NBA as LeBron James became the youngest player to score 30,000 points. And it seems like LeBron has been around forever, and he has, playing at a very high level. But what has it been like as just a neutral observer, being able to watch him from afar and see what he's been able to accomplish in his career so far?
You know, I think it's incredible, and I think kind of what this accomplishment specifically really highlights for him is just the longevity. And you kind of mentioned, you know, he's been around forever, and it really feels like that. But just how he continues to play, I mean, he takes his team to the NBA Finals basically every season, and he plays all those extra games and extra minutes, rarely gets many nights off, and still has little to no drop-off in his production and, you know, his all of his different stats. And the fact that he's now, I think, the seventh player who can consider himself a 30,000-point scorer, that's pretty special. And like you said, he was the fastest guy to get there. Who knows where he can go? This is all said and done. It's pretty fun to kind of speculate and guess at that. But for me, just the fact that, you know, knock on wood, he's been one of the healthier players in the history of the league in terms of injuries he's had to deal with. And just the way he prepares himself every offseason to then come into these regular seasons and these postseasons and handle the minutes load and just the production that he's able to do year in and year out, it's something that I think we even take for granted at times as NBA fans.
Has this season been his most impressive work, considering all of the turmoil that's been going on around him with various players not living up to what was expected of them, the defense falling off substantially, and what seems like a nightly rift in the locker room?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been the most challenging for him. I don't know if he'd want to admit that, but it's got to be right up there. And I think, his numbers still are incredible in terms of the usage and all the different things he's had to do. I mean, how many games has there been where it seems like he's led the team in every category on a given night? So he's still, you know, he has his hands full, and I think this is a unique season as well, just with, you know, you're working in Isaiah Thomas and you're adjusting to the loss of of Kyrie Irving, and then there's questions swirling surrounding this upcoming offseason where he obviously has a chance to become a free agent. But, you know, depending on where this season ends for the Cleveland Cavaliers, if they do end up back in the NBA Finals again, considering some of the other teams that have kind of risen in the East and seem like legitimate challengers for him, you could definitely place this among one of the very most impressive in terms of where they end up.
Looking now at the Timberwolves, and they went 31-51 last year. They've already equaled their win total from last year this year by going 31-18. They got a three-game lead in the Northwest Division. They've got tiebreakers on several teams in the Western Conference. But just looking big picture, Cal, obviously a lot of the credit can be given to Jimmy Butler for how this team has transformed themselves this year, and also the other free agent acquisitions, Jeff Teague, Taj Gibson. But what have been some other reasons for the Timberwolves to have made such a dramatic turnaround from last year to this year?
You know, I think Tom Thibodeau and you mentioned Jimmy Butler and even guys like Taj Gibson, some of the veteran guys who have been a part of, you know, winning seasons like this and even seasons that have seen some postseason success. I think those guys would point to just some of the winning habits and sort of day-to-day grind that you need to embrace as a team, kind of dating back to early to mid-December when this good stretch kind of started for the Timberwolves where they caught a little bit of fire. Tom Thibodeau would point out that the focus of the team in shoot-arounds and in walkthroughs as they prepare for opponents on a given day, he really liked where it was compared to maybe where it was in November toward the beginning of the season when everyone was still kind of adjusting to each other, new teammates, and just even if it was your first season under Tom Thibodeau and kind of the intensity that he kind of requires from his players in preparing for each game and, all right, here's our game plan for tonight, here's what our opponent does well, here's what they don't do well, here's what we need to exploit. He really has mentioned just over the last month and change that he's loved the preparation of the team, and I think he's someone who really wants to emphasize every detail because you never know on a given night what might be your edge in terms of getting a win. So I think the fact that the players are now embracing that, you know, they're really thinking and preparing for the game the morning of instead of just a couple hours before. And that just kind of speaks to, you know, especially some of these younger guys, most specifically Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns. I think it's a great sign of their development that, you know, they always were very skilled and talented players who could show you some flashes, some really special things on certain nights, but now they're doing more things. They're making winning plays that Tibbs kind of calls out, you know, whether it's Andrew rebounding a little bit more, Karl Anthony Towns being an absolute monster on the glass, or some of the weak side defensive help blocks that we've seen from Cat as well. You know, the scoring will always be there. Those guys are tremendously talented scorers, both of them. But their ability to kind of impact some of the other areas of the stat sheet, I think, have been impressive so far.
The Wolves have won two games in a row without the help of Jimmy Butler or Jamal Crawford, who have been letting some injuries heal up. And those came against the Toronto Raptors, who have been a very pleasant surprise in the Eastern Conference all season. And also the Los Angeles Clippers, who were on a tear up until the game against the Timberwolves. How impressive were those two wins, considering the Timberwolves were playing shorthanded?
Yeah, I think they're both equally impressive when you consider, like you mentioned, you know, both those teams were in the playoff pictures in their respective conferences, and L.A., like you said, had to fight hard to get back. I think they were in that eighth seed entering Monday's matchup, and the Raptors, they were one of the very best teams in the East. And then the other thing you consider is, you know, Jimmy Butler had missed just two games earlier in the season. It was just a short respiratory illness that he had that caused him to sit out. And both of those games were one-sided losses for the Timberwolves that that, frankly, they weren't close after a quarter or so, and it kind of left a lot of questions on, well, what's going to happen to this team if Jimmy has to miss more time? So that's been very encouraging, and I think it's again, just a sign that some of these other players have had a chance to become more comfortable with one another as teammates. Obviously, Jeff Teague with a 30-point game and Monday's win, so he's probably more comfortable as the floor general of this team now and knows where some of his teammates want the ball. And Andrew Wiggins, you know, in those two wins, no Jimmy Butler on the perimeter with him to help create and kind of either score for himself or create and facilitate for his teammates. And Wig just kind of stepped up and said, no problem. You know, he's got 69 points over these two games combined, and including 40 in L.A., and he's just looked like a totally different player in terms of the aggressiveness and his ability, whether it's, you know, three-pointers, getting to the free throw line, knocking some of those down. It's really been fun to see all the different ways Wig has been able to score in over these two games.
The Wolves also getting two players selected to be part of the All-Star Game festivities. Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler both being voted in by the coaches to be the All-Star reserves. And an interesting format with the All-Star Game this year. It won't be East versus West. It'll be Steph Curry versus LeBron James. So first question, Cal, just talk a little bit about how much of a reward it is for Karl-Anthony Towns and Jimmy Butler to be elected to the team. And second question, do you like the new format for the All-Star Game?
Yeah, so it's first of all, I think it's well-deserved both for Jimmy and Kat. It's pretty special for Kat, obviously. It's his first appearance as an All-Star. And, you know, there were even some videos going out last night when the news broke of Kat and his family getting to celebrate. Obviously, the team's still out on this road trip, so his family's out there with him, and that was cool that they got to share that moment. And I think with Kat, especially the way that his defense has picked up over the last month and change, and he really kind of accepted and embraced that challenge on that end of the floor from his coaching staff and even just some of the critics in the media. So he's done a great job of stepping up to the plate. And then Jimmy, obviously, we've seen all the different ways that Jimmy has impacted this team and even behind the scenes with the culture change and how he's really stepped in and become a leader and demanded more from some of these younger guys and really is reason number one when you think about what's caused this turnaround. And as you mentioned, you know, they've already matched the win total of last season. So both those guys, I think it's well-deserved, well-earned. And from Jimmy's case, hopefully he's just healthy enough to play in about a month when the All-Star game comes around. I don't think there's any reason for concern at this stage, but we just got to get him healthy first and get him back at that All-Star level. And as far as the new format, like you mentioned, I think it's pretty cool. I think I'm a little bit bummed that as of now they're not going to televise that draft, that selection process, because that on its own could be pretty fascinating in terms of guys getting snubbed and certain players not picking their friends or not picking their current teammates. That could just produce plenty of dramatic storylines, I think. But it will be interesting to see how these teams kind of shake up and what kind of, I guess, a balance you get in terms of the talent having to go against each other. Hopefully the guys get into it, because that's what I think makes the difference, is if the players kind of get behind it and if certain guys get motivated by not getting picked, or if certain guys start to click as teammates that we haven't seen before, sort of share the floor together. Those are some of the things that could be fun sort of storylines to watch.
Cal, looking at what the Timberwolves have coming up, they'll take on the Portland Trailblazers tonight on the road, and the Timberwolves beat the Trailblazers at home 120-103 a few games ago, four games ago. With how dominant the Timberwolves have been against the rest of their division, do we expect the Timberwolves to be able to come away with a win on the road on what is the first of a very tough back-to-back with Golden State waiting tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think it's been huge the way the Wolves have had success against the Northwest Division so far, like you pointed out. And I don't think it'll be easy, especially on the road tonight. Portland's a team that plays very well at home, and they're sort of like the Clippers. They're one of those teams that's jumbled together in that back portion of the Western Conference playoff picture. And, you know, no one wants to give up too much ground, even at this stage of the season. In terms of keeping yourself in the spot you want, in terms of not falling out of the playoff picture and then having to string together a bunch of wins to just get back in. And obviously guys like Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum have the ability to light you up any given night. But yeah, Minnesota they've executed their game plans against the Blazers so far this year. And you mentioned that just the recent win on that last lengthy homestand at Target Center. So I think, you know, it's a whole different animal if you're without Jimmy and Jamal Crawford again, and nothing's official yet. But I think it'd be a long shot for those guys to be ready to go here tonight. So that just means a tougher task for Andrew Wiggins, a tougher task for Karl Anthony Towns, and even guys like Nemanja Bjelica or Marcus Georges Hunt, they've seen their minutes both go up with Jimmy and Jamal out. So I'm very excited to see if these guys can carry it over from Monday and from Saturday, because, you know, those were two very impressive wins. And even if you mentioned how difficult this back-to-back is going to be in its entirety in terms of, you know, you've got to go back to the Bay Area again right away tomorrow night and take on the defending champs, but if somehow you can salvage one of these two, even I think you'd consider that a win, considering the, you know, the shorthanded nature of the Wolves right now. And it won't be easy with two games and two nights, but you could call it a successful road trip for sure. So let's see how they come out tonight. And I think you know, on the road, it's always tough, but if you bring that same effort, that same focus, they're going to have a chance.
And we'll see how it all turns out here. The Wolves definitely playing well here in 2018. We'll see how that continues as well. Cal, thanks for joining the show here today. Great stuff, and always good to talk to you with the Timberwolves playing well here so far this season. We'll see how they do on this tough stretch to finish out the month of January, and we'll catch up with you again later on down the road.
That sounds good. Anytime, Seth. Thank you.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Miss today's episode of The Scoop? Find each and every episode on myklgr.com under the Sports tab.
Touchdown!
This is the Purple Pillage with Neil Roberts and Lee Fockin. The Pillage starts now.
And welcome to another edition of the Purple Pillage, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge, located 4 miles west of Newtown, North Dakota. I'm Leif Bakken with Neil Roberts. And Neil, a sad day in Vikings Nation as they fell in the NFC Championship to the Eagles, a very good Eagles team that we weren't expecting the offense to be on fire like they were. Foles did an amazing job, and then the defense stepped up like they had all season and made it happen.
And if you're a Vikings fan, yeah, you're sitting here in a state of shock thinking, what happened still? How much do you credit the Eagles and how much do you blame the Vikings for those different ratios? You know, was it the Vikings did not show up, or was the Eagles just that good? Obviously, Atlanta played with them the week before. It's depressing. And this team has seemingly been able to get over, you know, momentum's a powerful thing in the NFL, especially with the Vikings this year. And they've really been able to take that punch in the mouth, come back and reestablish momentum in a lot of these games. The Saints game was pretty scary, though, because we had the momentum the whole first half. We lost it probably midway third quarter, toward the end of the third quarter, and could not get it back. Momentum was gone. One reason why that so-called Minneapolis miracle play was so unexpected is because we had no momentum. The team did look dead on the sideline, and despite that, this big play comes in. Then we open up the Philly game, and we drive down and get a touchdown. We get a 3-and-out or 6-and-out, whatever it was, but Philadelphia punted. We get the ball back, and things are seemingly going our way. And then that pick 6 happens. Keenum gets hit as he's throwing it, And again, Case has been better at that this year, realizing when he's in trouble or when he's under pressure and doesn't try to throw a pass like that. But that happened a couple times. He fumbled once again later, too. That pick six, you kept waiting for the Vikings to get momentum back, and it just never happened.
How they had all the momentum on their side, the crowd was even quieted down. It was mm-hmm. like, oh, here we go. And you could feel that through my TV screen. I could feel that the energy was just sucked out of the Eagles fans. But then everything just shifted. And it was crazy to see that shift. I heard the commentators talk about it, and that Zach Ertz was what Wentz called his little savior, or whatever you want to call it. He was the go-to guy, mm-hmm. and he looked good. Foles just did great, throwing 26 for 33, 352, no interceptions. He threw for 3 touchdowns. Pretty dang good, I would say. Case Keenum was 28 for 48 with 271 and 1 touchdown throw.
We needed a big play, and we got a few big plays, but we just couldn't get big play after big play. So we get one big play, maybe a good pass downfield, then we get it inside the 10, we can't punch it in, and just was frustrating to watch because we had taken care of business up until this game pretty well, you know? So I just was not expecting as many failures on plays and sequences, and Philly set a lot of picks on a lot of the receiving routes, so you can't sit and blame Harrison Smith on all of those necessarily, but I saw a stat where they threw it Harrison Smith 4 times, had 4 nice completions, threw it Trey Waynes and completed really at Will, and Trey Waynes, you guys have thought Trey's had a great year. I mean, he's been a project for the Vikings as a first round pick out of Michigan State, but one of the fastest corners in the league, and he's really had a nice year. He just looked lost a lot out there on Sunday. Just a lot of open receivers, and his first look was open a lot too, and that was a frustrating part, that the Vikings couldn't cover a guy for 2 seconds. Frustrating day for Viking fans, and I mean, I haven't lost all hope with this team for sure. I know we've got a lot of talent coming back next year, but it's really hard to look to next year when you're still reeling from the NFC Championship loss.
Well, let's move on to our Player of the Week, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Rodney Carrington coming February 17th. Get your tickets now on fourbearscasino.com. Neil, our Player of the Week is going to be Jerick McKinnon, who had 10 carries for 40 yards, and he had 11 out of 12 receptions for 86 yards, and that's more than any of the wide receivers that we saw for the Vikings this week.
Yeah, you know, Jerick McKinnon was a guy that, you know, as you watch the game, and not that people quit trying, I don't think the team quit, but, you know, you get into a certain mode where you're trying to give it your all, but you're just sensing that the game's gone. With McKinnon, I mean, it just seemed like he was still bouncing off tacklers and getting an extra yard, picking up that blitzing linebacker and throwing his body in there during the fourth quarter. I mean, Jerick McKinnon seemingly did not give up at all in this game, and so he really impressed me, and it's kind of unfortunate that he's probably gone and as a free agent and won't be back in purple next year. And if that's the case, I really wish Jerick McKinnon well. He's treated us well over the years down in Mankato and given us great interviews, and he's really been a spark plug for the Vikings since, you know, coming in out of Georgia Southern as a rookie 4 years ago, has really played a key role for the Vikings over the years.
Jerick McKinnon, your Player of the Week, brought to you by Four Bears Casino and Lodge. Well, Neil, we've got a few weeks out. We're going to continue doing shows before the Super Bowl, but we've got a couple of news things to kind of talk about. Two of them that are big to me anyway. One was a statement that was released. The Vikings were cleaning out their stuff, that Keenum and Bridgewater announced that they don't know what their future looks like right now with the Vikings. There was no mention of Bradford, and we talked earlier about how maybe it'd be nice to see Keenum come back to the Vikings, but at the same time, he's not going to get the chunk of change that he thought he would.
I don't know the numbers. I mean, if they'd have won out, I think the team would have been obligated to bring him back somehow. You know, like the Kirk Cousins deal, the one-year franchise for him would have been like $23 million, so they probably would have had to do that. Now, of course, do you really give Case Keenum $23 million? I mean, I don't think so. I mean, nothing against Case, but you just look around the league and the last couple of games where he wasn't as effective, and it's unfortunately a really, what have you done for me lately type of league, and where are you going to be with this guy 2 games, 5 games, 10 games, next postseason down the road? I'd like to see Case Keenum back. I mean, the fans love him. He likes Minnesota, seemingly, and he really helped that offense out a lot this year when they were in dire straits. He doesn't know where he stands. I'm not sure if the team knows where they stand right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, and with Bridgewater, they like Teddy's progression physically, and I think they liked it on the field too, but when it came down to crunch time, and it made sense because Bradford's had a lot of time with his Pat Shurmur offense getting reps. So when he was healthy again, for a short long-term game, yeah, he's had a lot more reps under these conditions than Teddy Bridgewater. So that made sense to me to have him as the backup. But looking ahead for a year from now, do you really trust Bradford's knee? Where's Teddy at medically? So those are questions that are out there and answers that I do not know. And there's some good free agents out there as well. Lots of unanswered questions, and it's already an interesting offseason, Leaf.
The other thing that we're going to touch on next week, Neil, is offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur off to the Giants. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about other Vikings news, what's coming up for the Eagles and the Patriots in Super Bowl 52. But for now, that's going to do it for the Purple Pillage. For Neil Roberts, I'm Leif Bakken. And until next time, Pillage on!
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. Catch The Scoop Monday through Friday from 3 to 4 p.m. on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9.
Back here on The Scoop, we'll talk some Philadelphia Eagles side of the Super Bowl tomorrow with Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports. We'll also recap the NFC title game from his perspective as well, but wanted to take a look at what is going to be arguably the biggest question mark for the Vikings heading into next season. That would be the quarterback spot. Because you got the top three choices who are all going to be free agents. Sam Bradford, Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater, in no particular order. And you look at what would make the most sense. Now, Keenum finished the year, had a great season for the Vikings. 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 3,547 yards. Completed 67.6% of his passes, had a quarterback rating of 98.3, QBR of 71.3. However, you look to the postseason in two games, he completed 60% of his passes, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. One of those touchdowns was, of course, the Minneapolis Miracle, and also a fumble. His quarterback rating went down to 73.5. His QBR was 48.8. Now, some of that can be attributed to the fact that the two teams that he played, the Saints and the Eagles, were some of the top pass-rushing teams in the NFL, and the offensive line had some difficulties in that regard. So some of that can be attributed there, but also the fact that it was his first postseason action in his career could certainly be attributed as well. But Keenum certainly exceeded expectations that anyone could have possibly put on him coming into the season. We thought that Sam Bradford would be the guy to lead the way the whole year, and Sam got hurt in week one, did not play in week two, tried to come back against the Bears, but was pulled in the first half. So it was pretty much Keenum the whole season, and you really can't argue with what we saw from him throughout the season. Now, just looking, just for fun, just as kind of an interesting exercise, let's look at some of the options that would be available if the Vikings decide that they want to go a different direction. The top two quarterback options, according to Spotrac.com, Drew Brees, who made $24.25 million in 2017. He is technically a free agent. New Orleans, though, I would be surprised if they did not keep him. But nonetheless, he is an unrestricted free agent, so he is certainly an option. Maybe the most intriguing and potentially the long-term solution, if the Vikings decide that they want to just get it solved and just move on, is Kirk Cousins, who's been in Washington for the majority, pretty much the entirety of his career so far. He is 29, and had 27 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and wow, 13 fumbles as well. Nonetheless, 23.9 million for Cousins, threw for just over 4,000 yards in 16 games. So for Cousins, he has been a pretty consistent option, has been able to get some things done with a supporting cast that has been hurt for a majority of the last couple of years. Their offensive line was decimated near the end of the season, yet he was still able to put up some good numbers with Washington. So if you want to just get the quarterback situation solved, then that might be the way to go. Now, looking at the other options, you got Sam Bradford, who made $18 million this past season. Bradford obviously has the injury concerns, but has shown that he, when healthy, is an extremely capable quarterback. I think he will find a job somewhere, probably not with the Vikings, but I think he'll find a job somewhere that will make him the starter. Somebody looking for a stopgap that can keep the seat warm until a rookie quarterback is ready to come in. So you look at teams like Denver, maybe the New York Jets, some other teams that might draft quarterbacks. Cleveland maybe would be a spot. All possibilities for Bradford, who I think will go that route and take a smaller deal, a shorter deal, and maybe some more guaranteed money in order to get one of those types of situations. Then you got Jay Cutler, who came out of retirement and played for Miami. He made $10 million, 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, and threw for 2,600 yards. That Miami offense was a little bit disgusting last year, and I don't think Cutler factors in at all. Now, Josh McCown of the New York Jets, he threw for 2,900 yards in 13 games, 18 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He made $6 million last year. Now, there is another way that the Vikings can go with the quarterback situation if they don't decide that they want to re-sign Case Keenum. If they want to go to Teddy Bridgewater and think that he is the guy who they want leading the franchise long-term, you need to have a capable backup in the event that Teddy struggles or does not show that he is ready to come back and play full-time. We saw him get a couple snaps in the game against the Bengals, but really nothing other than that here this year as he worked his way back from his knee injury. But it's fine if they want to go that route, because Teddy's going to be the cheapest option. $1.7 million is what Teddy made last year, and that allows you to do a lot of different things with that money. So you have Teddy as the starter. You maybe bring in a guy like Josh McCown for $6 or $7 million to be the backup quarterback, and then you throw the rest of the money at beefing up the offensive line, adding some reinforcements on the defense, maybe getting a third wide receiver. That is, I think those are the best ways to do it. And if the Vikings decide that, hey, we're going to go get Drew Brees or Kirk Cousins or somebody like that, I'm fine with that. I think a quarterback who plays at that level would help this team out quite a bit. We saw how the team played when the quarterback play was above par, so to speak. So if they want to get that for pretty much the entire season for the next couple of years, that's fine by me. If they want to go the route of somebody who is going to move the ball on offense and allow them to control time of possession and keep the defense fresh and make the smart throws, which is what they had with Teddy in 2015 when they went 11-5, that's fine too. But then take the money that you're not spending on the quarterback and apply it to other areas. Get another offensive lineman that can be a starter, or get another receiver, or get some defensive help. And they'll address those all in the draft as well, I'm sure. But it really is going to be dependent as well as who they pick for offensive coordinator. If it is somebody who values more of a intermediate to deep passing attack, well, then maybe we're going after a guy like Cousins or Breeze. If it's somebody like Daryl Bevel, who runs more of a West Coast system with those short to intermediate passes, then that might be a hint that we're going to Case Keenum or Teddy Bridgewater. I think Case is going to have quite a few different teams vying for his services. He showed that he is very, very good at dealing with pressure in the pocket. He moves around really well in the pocket. Just what you see with him is what we saw with Brett Favre, where he has some throws sometimes where you just wonder what's going on, but then he'll make the throw like the Minneapolis Miracle that was right where it needed to be. So you take the good with the bad. You do that with a lot of these quarterbacks. We'll dive quite a bit more into this topic throughout the offseason, but just kind of wanted to touch on it a little bit while it's fresh. And I think you'll either see them go all in on one of those top guys, or they'll get somebody that they had on the roster, whether it be Case or Teddy, and they will put the rest of that money to use elsewhere. So that's just a little bit on that, how that'll play out. Plenty more of that coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're going to take our final break. We'll take a look at what's on deck for tonight. That is on the way after this.
You're listening to The Scoop on KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9. KLGR 1490 AM and FM 95.9 is radio you can depend on for sports and play-by-play.
Let's take a look at what's on deck here for tonight. In the NBA, to lead it off, New Orleans is at Charlotte at 6 o'clock. Utah at Detroit at 6. Phoenix is at Indiana at 6 o'clock. Chicago at Philadelphia at 6 o'clock. Toronto at Atlanta at 6:30. Houston at Dallas at 7 o'clock. San Antonio at Memphis at 7 o'clock. Minnesota Timberwolves at Portland tonight at 9 o'clock. Boston is at the LA Clippers at 9:30 tonight. Over to men's basketball. Big Ten schedule for tonight. Nebraska at Rutgers at 6 o'clock Central Time. Indiana at Illinois at 8 o'clock Central Time. And the NHL schedule for tonight. Toronto at Chicago at 8 o'clock Eastern. Los Angeles at Calgary at 10 o'clock Eastern. That is a look at what's on deck. Time to wrap it up. That does it for today's edition of The Scoop. A big thank you to Cal Soderquist for joining the show today to talk about Timberwolves basketball. Tomorrow, as mentioned, we'll be joined by Cody Benjamin of CBS Sports to talk Philadelphia Eagles, to recap the NFC title game, a little bit of a look ahead to what the Eagles expect to see from New England in the Super Bowl. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 3:05.